Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hi there, Duke fans. Welcome to DBR Bites, episode number 41, the Duke Basketball Roundup. I'm Jason Evans. I'm joined by Donald Wine. We got a bunch of little topics. I'm not sure how long this episode's going to go, Donald. It is possible this may be one of the longest bites we've ever had, but it's like a bunch of little potpourri kind of things, and we sort of said we're going to call it a bites anyway. So, you know.
We have gone to the restaurant, Jason, and we've ordered a bunch of small plates for the table. So we're going to take nibbles out of all these small plates.
I like it. I like it. We're going to start with this. The Duke roster for next season is already changing. We've gotten word, and I should say, it's sort of strange the way we've gotten word, but we've gotten word that Christian Reeves has entered the transfer portal and in all likelihood has played his last game at Duke. He didn't play very many games at Duke in his career, although there were always very high hopes for him. Christian Reeves, the king of the preseason scrimmage, so to speak. I want to be clear. I'm not saying that as a way of disparaging the guy or anything like that, but just kind of the reality of how his career went down. It has been reported by On3, which is a pretty significant outlet when it comes to tracking transfer portals and recruiting and those kind of things. On3 is reporting that Christian Reeves has entered the transfer portal. They quote him directly. You know, they say that he told them that. Donald, I am sort of intrigued. Usually Duke announces this stuff. And when the Chronicle reached out to the Duke Sports Information Department for a comment on this, they did not comment at all. I don't know if perhaps they were planning some kind of announcement and slipped out earlier. I'm not sure. I don't think that it means that Christian Reeves, you know, that he is planning on coming back to Duke. I think he is planning to take the portal and go someplace else, but just sort of interesting to me the way this happened. It's a little different than how we usually see this kind of thing happen.
Well, I think in a way we're lucky that we have to kind of go back a couple of years to try and recall the last time somebody transferred and how it was done. I think that was what Joey Baker, who transferred to Michigan. And
yeah,
I don't remember if that was like an official announcement or if he came out on his social media and said, hey, I'm leaving the program. And then they came out after that, right? Sometimes you see schools will react, not necessarily react, but they'll come out after the player makes a statement regarding their future with the team. And then they give the pleasantries and the highlight reel. We even see that at times when guys go to the draft, clear their draft, they make the announcement, and then Duke follows up almost immediately with a, hey, you know, he's going to be great in the NBA, yada, yada, yada. And then they play, like, you know, the highlights and stuff like that. So having said that, we wish Christian Reeves well. We, you know, Jason, you and I, we had talked early in the season about how we had hoped that Christian Reeves would make the leap and become a part of the rotation, especially given his size. You don't teach 7'1", they don't grow on trees. And the fact is he also, you know, when he was on the team and healthy, he was helping guys in practice get better. He was helping Derek Lively get better. He was helping Kyle Filipowski get better last year and those sort of things. So just because he didn't appear on the court that much for Duke doesn't mean he didn't make an impact on how guys shape themselves in the program. So we thank him for his contributions. We wish him well. He has 3 years of eligibility left, so we're probably going to see him play somewhere else. And hopefully he balls out, except, of course, against Duke.
There you go. I think you could kind of see the writing on the wall for this one when Duke got the commitment from Kamen Malawach. It just doesn't feel like there is, and Patrick Ngongba, although, you know, there are injury concerns there with Patrick, but it just doesn't feel like there's really a role that makes a lot of sense for Christian Reeves next year on Duke. And frankly, with Patrick Ngongba probably being a guy who's multiple years in the program, I'm not sure it makes sense for Christian Reeves long-term. So I completely understand why he moved on. Speaking of guys coming into the program, not guys going out, Donald, the next topic we have to address is the McDonald's All-American game, which happened just last night. There were two Blue Devils playing in the game, even though we have what is considered the number one class in the country, a six-person class, just sort of the vagaries of who gets picked for the team and things like that. And how you qualify for the McDonald's All-American game. There were only two Blue Devils in the contest. It was, of course, Cooper Flagg and Isaiah Evans, both of whom are ranked in the top 10 players in the class. They were both playing on the East team. One of the things I kind of liked about this was, for the most part, they managed to keep future teammates together. So, like, the two Carolina guys were together. They're actually on the same team with the Duke guys. Two Carolina guys were together. There were two Alabama guys that also played together. Two guys going to Rutgers played together. The one school that didn't was Kentucky. Kentucky had three players in the game. Two of them were on the East. One of them was on the West. I think it was cool that Cooper Flagg and Isaiah Evans were able to play together. They both started for the East squad and clearly had been working together. And there were a couple times that they found each other in nice ways that you can see, you can sort of see in their future, so to speak. I'll let you go first. Give me your impressions. And why don't we start with Cooper Flagg and then we'll get to Isaiah Evans.
Cooper Flagg, I thought, was, you know, again, he showed flashes of being the best player in college basketball, the player that a lot of people think is projected to be the number one pick in the draft in 2025, right? 2025. And, I think the one thing I think I texted you as soon as this happened, he had an incredible block in the second quarter on Dylan Harper, where his hand got above the box that's on the backboard. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're doing measurements, that's about 12 feet in the air to do that. So he got all the way up, sent the ball into his own bench.
It looked so effortless. That was the thing about
it. Yeah. Like, it was a help side block. Yeah.
He got up so quickly and it looked so effortless. I was just like, you know, wow.
And also, I'm going to read the stats. Stat lines in All-Star games do not count. They're not something to read into. You can't say, oh, this guy had a terrible game. 8.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and that vicious block. Like, he did, again, it kind of falls in line with Duke's plan of having guys that are going to be able to affect the stat sheet in a lot of different ways. You want guys who are not one-dimensional, and nothing about Cooper Flagg is one-dimensional, but he showed flashes of everything. He even hit a nice smooth three right before that block in the second quarter, a nice smooth three from the top of the key. So he's the real deal. And again, an All-Star game is not a way to really describe that, because a lot of people are just going for dunks and long three-pointers and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I think the one thing about it, Jason, is they were on the East team that came from behind and won. So yeah, they had a little competitive fire in them, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and I will also add regarding that, just really quickly, both teams were playing actual defense. They were It was not typical All-Star game offense. There were some of the showboating and silliness that you see, but not like the NBA. I mean, they were attempting to run plays to some extent. They were attempting to create for others. There was a lot of passing and a lot of assists. I thought it looked more like a game than a usual All-Star game does. As for Cooper Flagg, I mean, like I said, he started. He led the East in minutes played. And if you think those things are not significant, you're wrong. His coach, who wanted to win, knew that the best way for them to win was to have Cooper Flagg out there as much as possible. Look, he did struggle with his finishing around the basket. And his outside shot, you know, he didn't hit a huge percentage of his threes. But I thought his shot looked pretty good. And the most significant thing about his shot was that he looked very comfortable taking the threes. He looked comfortable taking it off the dribble, which he did on multiple occasions. And his release, oh my gosh. His release
it's
on
so
that
high.
Is so high. Yeah. First of all, I mean, he's an uber athlete, so he's elevating really high anyway. But he shoots from so high over his head. I don't know how anyone has any hope of bothering his shot. Like, when he misses, it's going to be on him, not on the defense. Now, it's worth noting, like, Ian Jackson and Boogie Fland, who are going to UNC and Kentucky, were shooting a lot. Now, they took some pretty good shots, but those two guys were firing it up every chance they could, and that's one of the reasons I feel like Cooper Flagg didn't get quite as many touches as we would be used to on offense. I do think that once he gets to Duke, once they're playing more within a full team concept, that you're going to see the ball going through him more than you saw in this game. But there were, like you said, flashes, moments where you could see how Cooper Flagg could be an initiator for the other guys around him. You mentioned he had that incredibly explosive block. You mentioned he was credited with one steal. Frankly, his quick, long arms resulted in at least a couple other turnovers, including a really key turnover with about 30 seconds left or so that sort of set up the winning play. You can absolutely see how this guy, how his game is going to translate to the next level. You cannot teach the kind of physical gifts he has. And again, the quick, long arms and limbs are going to be a defensive hazard for opposing teams. And then the last thing I want to mention is I was really impressed with his ability to transition from defense to offense. Mm-hmm. Grabbing both getting out on the break and grabbing rebounds and feeding guys up the floor. He grabs and goes. I can't even tell you how important that is going to be for Duke next year. I think it is going to make things easier for the players around Cooper Flagg. His combination of physical gifts and skill are going to allow him to be just an outlet machine and a fast break machine. That's what I took from watching this game more than anything else.
I was going to say about his shot, the way that he releases it, it reminds you, this is the old shot. This reminds you of Bill Cartwright's shot back in the day.
Oh yeah. But, nice. I love that.
But
yeah.
Way smoother, right? Bill Cartwright was not a guy when you saw a shot, everyone was like, man, that shot is trash, but it just happened to go in. But also it was unblockable because he was 7'2" and he shot the ball, you know, 2 feet over his head. And then he was jumping. That's what Cooper Flagg does. He has enough of a wingspan, and when he puts it over his head and jumps with the ball, it's almost like the ball is 12 feet in the air before it's released, and he has a nice arc on it. So it's going to get there. And I use that to kind of segue. You were talking about how he gets out on the break and stuff like that. He is not the fastest guy on the floor, but his motor is among the strongest, and that allows him to be quick in that regard. And I use that to segue to Isaiah Evans, because I think while Isaiah Evans didn't have a good shooting night, he also has that motor. He has that ability and the fire to be like, okay, we got the ball, let's go get it. And they're going to go out and run. If you're a Duke fan and you watch this, while you may not have seen the best shooting expedition outcome, right? You saw guys who are competitive. You saw guys who have a fire. And when they get the ball, they want to go, go, go. And it's not necessarily fast, but they want to get down the floor because they know they can inflict damage on their opponent on offense, and they have the tools to do it. Isaiah Evans, he had 0 points last night, but Isaiah Evans, I'm not worried about that, because Isaiah Evans had plenty of times this year where he was a national guy where people are like, yo, he's averaging 45 points a game. Like, that man was a problem all year. I'm not worried about one night with him not shooting the ball. But again, he got 4 rebounds, he got an assist, he got a steal. And like I said, that motor was always present and running. I think that's going to be key.
Look, one of the things on Isaiah Evans that everyone has always said about him is that he is, you know, he is really thin, and he is going to have to bulk up. He's going to have to increase his strength to be able to feel comfortable playing with with stronger players that he's going to face in college. And I think that impacted him some in this game, that even playing with high school guys, he was playing with stronger, bigger high school guys, and it was tougher for him to get off his shot. I think his jumper looks good, but it did not fall in this game. 0 for 6 right. from the field, 0 for 4, definitely struggled finishing. Like, you know, the two times that he went inside the three-point line, I think on both of them he got his shot blocked. I know he got it blocked at least once. You know, he's going to have to figure that kind he's going to have to figure that kind of stuff out. But it's worth noting, as I said, he also was in the starting lineup for his team. He played the fifth most minutes of anybody on his team. So while he was out there not hitting any baskets, his coach was leaving him in. He was playing and look, in these All-Star games, they're trying to get a lot of guys' minutes. So the fact that Isaiah Evans played the fifth most minutes and started tells me that his coaches saw stuff in practice that said to them, this is a guy who needs to be in the game. He didn't have a great game, but what they saw in practice, which is a lot longer than the amount of time they had in the game, they were pleased with. And I did think he seemed active and engaged on defense. You know, I don't know what Duke's roster is going to be next year. I don't know whether Isaiah Evans is going to start or not. I think there are a lot of scenarios where he does. And there are a lot of scenarios where he's like, you know, sixth, seventh man for this team. Either way, I'm still convinced this is a guy who's going to play a good bit, and he's going to have games. You're going to have games where you're going to be like, that guy was unstoppable today. You know, he didn't have it in the McDonald's All-American game, but I'm cool with that.
Yeah. You're not winning a national championship in the McDonald's All-American game. You win that, you know, by him coming to campus in the summer and doing the workouts and grinding and going through the season next year with his teammates. So I'm not concerned there. Jason, I know I think we're about done with the men's side of things, but I did want to note that on the women's game, McDonald's All-American, we did have one Duke player there, Ariana Robertson. She didn't shoot well, but she had 5 rebounds, a steal, and one absolutely vicious block as well. Like, to the point where during the game, I think maybe a minute or two after she did it, it was up on the SportsCenter's Twitter, like, y'all need to see this. So if you haven't seen it, go to Twitter. It's out there. But just again, Kara Lawson is developing and bringing in players that may not be shooting the ball well, but even when they are, they're affecting defense really well. And I think, you know, having a lot of defensive standouts is going to really help the Duke women as well. So I thought that was cool. Again, not many schools have players in both the men's and women's McDonald's All-American game. So I'm really glad to see, was to be able to catch a little bit of her game too.
Yeah. By the way, in that women's game, Sarah Strong, who is the number one women's player, you know, in the class, was also named the MVP, and she hasn't decided on a school yet. I don't know. I'm not at all of an expert on women's recruiting, but there's been some talk that she's considering. The Duke is one of her like schools that she's interested in. She would be a very big deal recruit for Duke if we could land her. I don't know how likely that is, and she's probably going to decide fairly soon. But yeah, she was super impressive in that game too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and as long as we're at it, really quick, going back to the men's game, I just wanted to quickly mention a couple guys coming to the ACC. I already mentioned that Ian Jackson was one of the leading scorers for the East squad. Just looked really good and really fluid. He's going to UNC, and frankly, Carolina probably is going to have a lot of spots to fill from their team this year. And Ian Jackson, I'm going to tell you right now, will be starting for Carolina next year. And then the other guy who I thought looked really good, who's headed to the ACC, is Jahlil Bethea. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
I think it's Bethea. Yeah.
Bethea, yeah. He's headed to Miami. Looked pretty good, had a nice outside shot. You know, looks like one of these guards who's going to fill it up from the perimeter, but also crazy athlete. He won the slam dunk contest by slamming the ball. He is 6'4". He had 2 of his 7-foot-tall teammates line up, and he jumped over both of them for the game, for the winning slam dunk.
A windmill over the two of them.
Wow.
And did not use them as a plant. Like, you know how sometimes people put the plant arm down to kind of usher them over? He did none of that. Miami, get ready. This man can fly.
Yeah. He's going to be fun to watch. I thought the McDonald's All-American game, just really quickly, like I said, I thought it was well played, but the amount of talent, they mentioned this on the broadcast, this class, again, that Duke has 6 players in, is considered a better class than we've had in several years, you could see why. There was a lot of talent on that floor, a lot of guys who I think are going to be impacting the game, perhaps more so than, you know, the past couple year of freshmen have impacted college basketball.
And Jason, you know, it's all done to kind of raise awareness for the Ronald McDonald House and stuff like that. I thought it was interesting, right? I thought it was a really cool interview that they did with Cooper Flagg's mom.
I love that. Yes.
Yeah. And they talked about the fact that she and the family, when Ace and Cooper were born, I guess they were born, what, 100 days premature or something like that?
Very premature. Yeah.
And so they used the Ronald McDonald House to kind of transition into, you know, while they were in the NICU and in the hospital, they were at, you know, living at the Ronald McDonald House in Maine to try and, you know, get their lives, at least stay close to the kids while, until they were able to bring them to their home, out of the hospital. So I thought that was a really cool, interview, but also it goes to show like the power of what this game does. It's not just about the basketball players, but they also volunteered the Ronald McDonald House, and to have a story connect like that, I thought was a really cool way to kind of present that.
Yeah, I love that. I couldn't agree more. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, as this DBR Bites edition continues to roll on, it's not a Bites. I can already tell it's not a Bites.
It's a Bite. We're biting. We're snacking here.
On the other side, the best team of the past 30 years, the best college basketball team of the past 30 years. It's not even close, people. I'm going to tell you who it is when we come back.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, we're back from the break, and we're going to hit through a couple, I mean, like super fast topics here. First one is, I just want everybody to know, we talked about how well the ACC did in this year's tournament. The ACC won a total of 17 games, well, or appeared in a total of 17 games in the tournament this year. The NCAA pays you as a conference about $2 million per appearance. That means the ACC this year is making $34 million. That, by the way, they don't count the national championship game. All that counts is the first game.
And the Final Four, yeah.
Right, so you can't, so like even if NC State wins, we don't get an extra appearance. So the ACC is capped out at 17 units, as they call it. That is making $34 million for the conference. A year ago, the ACC made $24 million for the conference by the performance of teams in the NCAA tournament. The extra $10 million this year, look, this is a conference that's starving for money, that wants to keep up with the other bigger conferences. The ACC, by the way, the number one conference this year in terms of total earnings from the NCAA tournament. So I thought that was a big deal. And then I just wanted to mention very quickly, Donald, I know you want to comment on this. The broadcast on Easter Sunday of Duke versus NC State on CBS drew in 15.1 million viewers. That's a lot of people. 15.1 million viewers makes it the most watched Elite Eight game since 2019. Not only that, it was the most watched basketball game since 2022. I want to clarify, that includes the NBA Finals last year. That includes the national championship game last year. I mean, it is just a monster number. And I know NC State was a part of that, but if you look at sort of the history of the highest rated games in recent years, they're all Duke games. They're all Duke games. I know a lot of people are watching us because they hate us. I know a lot of people are watching us because they love us. Duke brings in the ratings, and the NC State game is historically high ratings.
I think also, Jason, I think I read this somewhere, that it was the most watched ACC sporting event in the last like 5 years, like since Clemson was in the college football playoff title game. So I'm just here to tell you, Clemson and FSU, you might want to amend your lawsuit, because I'm looking at these numbers here and I'm seeing that maybe Duke should be suing the ACC for more money or getting a bigger piece of the pie, because we're the ones bringing in all the action.
Yeah. By the way, the 15.1 million people who watched that basketball game, had it been a football game, it would have been the fifth highest rated football game of the entire year. Like basically the national championship game, the semifinals, and the
NFL playoff games, like the Super Bowl and then like a couple playoff games.
Yeah. I mean, like it was this is a huge number for college basketball, which apparently the people who are rearranging the college sports landscape don't think matters at all. Newsflash, college basketball matters, especially when the Blue Devils are playing. Donald, as we move on to another topic, I teased this before the break. I think this is really interesting. So I was looking at Ken Pomeroy's rankings after Duke was eliminated, and it just sort of jumped out to me the way UConn's been playing lately. They've really, not only are they number one, they've like rocketed to the top of number one. I was like, wow, they're so far ahead of the rest of the field. And it caused me to sort of start going back historically. I'm like, oh, how does this UConn team maybe compare to other teams? Because right now, UConn has an efficiency margin of 35.11, which is almost 4 points higher than Houston and Purdue, who both have very good efficiency margins. But that gap, that four-point gap, is really impressive. The last time a team had that kind of margin over the rest of college basketball was in 2018, when Villanova was that much better, like 4+ points better than Virginia, who was the second best team. Villanova won the title that year. Virginia lost to UMBC. And so then I started looking back and I was like, well, so that 35.1 efficiency margin that they had, that measures how many points per 100 possessions are they better than the average college basketball team. Like Ken Pomeroy says that this year, if UConn played an average college basketball team and they played 100 possessions of basketball, UConn would win by more than 35 points, which is big. That's a huge number.
A lot of points
for playing an average team. And so I went back and I was looking, trying to find teams that were better than that. And there are some of them out there. Gonzaga in 2021 was higher than that. The 2015 Kentucky team that lost the national title, lost to Wisconsin, and then Duke won. That 2015 Kentucky team had a 36.91. Man, that's a huge number. I thought that 36.91 would be unassailable in the Ken Pom era. It dates back to 1997, almost 30 years ago. Most years, the best team in the country has an average efficiency margin of about 32 or 33. Some years it's as low as 30. Some years like this, it's as high as 35. And I was going back. I'm trying to see who's the best team. Who's the best, most efficient team that there is. I got to 2001, the Duke Blue Devils in 2001. 37.22. I was like, come on. That is a massive number. They're almost a full point better than the great Kentucky team. Donald, you know what I did next? I clicked back two more years. I thought 2001 was special. I was wrong. The 1999 Duke Blue Devils are like nothing the Ken Pomeroy era, nothing the efficiency folks have ever seen before. Are you ready for the number? Again, I was saying 35, 36, 37 is like unheard of.
So before you say the number, you said that 2001 was 37.2.
Yeah.
And UConn this year is at what, 35 and change?
35.1, yeah.
I'm guessing 41.3.
That would be absurd, sir. That would be crazy, and you would be wrong. 43.01. They were 12 points per game better than the second best team that year, Michigan State. You can't really compare efficiency margin across different years because the average team one year is different than the average team another year. But the difference between the 1999 Duke Blue Devils and the next best team of the past 30 years is about like the difference between that team, which was 2001 Duke. It's about like the difference between 2001 Duke and like the 50th best team. The gap between 1 and 2 is the same as the gap between 2 and 50. So if you're ever out there and you find yourself talking to someone about the best team of the past 30 years or so, perhaps you're going to run into some Kentucky fan who's going to tell you how their 2015 team was robbed and did not win a title. Just call up the 1999 KenPom data and laugh as their jaw hits the floor, because no one has been as incredible as that team was.
And if I recall correctly, isn't that the first year in the KenPom that you can, or the furthest back you can go in KenPom, or is there a couple other years that you can go back to?
No, you can go back to 1997.
97, okay. So again, parts of that team started, and you could see your basically progression to being the Monstars of college basketball, which is a crime against humanity that team didn't win. But man, I still remember watching those games and just like the amount of like, just, you know, we've talked about that team ad nauseum, but like the amount of teams that they just absolutely just, by the first TV timeout, you're like, man, they're up 15 already. Like the game is over. That's where I feel like a lot of people want to get back to.
Yeah, it was, I mean, they would play good teams. They'd play top 10 teams and win by 20 points. It was ridiculous how good that team was. All right, Donald, I know you got one more thing we got to do before we run an important honor for a Duke alumni.
Yeah, friend Lindsay Harding. She became the G League Coach of the Year for her role with the Stockton Kings. She's the head coach there. She is the first woman ever to win the G League Coach of the Year. And one of the rising stars in the pro ranks as far as coaching is concerned. She's been considered for some assistant coaching jobs in the NBA. I feel like the trajectory for her might be higher than that. She has been absolutely stellar as a coach since she has done that. She's also been like a GM in the GM's office as well, and it's kind of been doing that as well. But man, what a tremendous honor to, one, become the first woman to do that, but also just the way that she has ascended to one of the best young coaches in the game of basketball in such a short time since her playing career ended, I think is nothing short of incredible. So congratulations to Lindsay Harding. Again, number 10 is in the rafters, and for good reason. It's an incredible deal. And I suspect, Jason, that sooner rather than later, just like a lot of their players are probably aspiring to get that call from the big clubs, she's going to get a call from a big club to be on a bench very soon.
Yeah, she led them to a 24-10 record. That's it's a pretty impressive win percentage of better than 70%.
That's good.
Yeah, and by the way, the G League, not as easy. I don't want to say easy, but more of a challenge in some ways than coaching in the NBA, because the players are sort of rotating around a little bit. You know, if a guy plays really well for you, suddenly he's gone.
He's gone. Yeah. Yes. And not necessarily to your parent club, right? Like, you know, you could have a guy ball out and all of a sudden this other team's like, yeah, we need him. And all of a sudden you have to send the thank you tweet. Hey, thanks for being here for 10 games and balling out, and good luck with this other team in the NBA. But yeah, it's super difficult to have to navigate rosters. And I think that's the key here, is she had to navigate a lot of turnover in her roster to get to that point and still was able to shine, which I think is awesome.
Yeah. And a great honor for her. And Look, you got, like you said, you got to think there's nothing but big things ahead for Lindsey Harding as a coach after a very, very successful career in the WNBA.
I will also mention that this has also been brought up as well. We're not going to fully comment on this, Jason, but as you probably know, Tennessee women got rid of their head coach. And one of the things that came out initially in the aftermath of them letting their coach go was that Kara Lawson is a Tennessee grad and Kara Lawson is a person that might be on their interest list. Now, has she had talks with them? We don't know. There has been no news on that yet. Is she planning on leaving? We don't know that. It seems like a Cutcliffe situation from when he was at Duke and Tennessee came calling and he famously said, I already have a job and told them no, thanks. We're hoping obviously that if that came to that, Kara Lawson would say the same thing, but it has not come to that yet. If we get more news on that, we obviously will comment on it here because we love Kara Lawson. We would love to keep her here. And hopefully like Cutcliffe, she says, hey, I got a job. It's in Durham, but thanks for the interest.
Yeah, and I'll go ahead and say the implied comment that you just made there, which is that if Kara Lawson does decide that she wants to go back to her alma mater, to a legendary college basketball program at Tennessee, we will wish her all the best. And I will go ahead and predict that the very first phone call that will be made by Nina King will be to none other than Lindsey Harding to see if she wants to come home as well. So, all right, with that said, we'll do it here on the latest edition of DBR Bites. Donald and I giving you all the news. We are awaiting additional news to come down the pipe from various Duke players making their decisions about whether they'll be back in Durham or whether they'll be playing basketball elsewhere next season. Also be on the lookout, probably in the next 24 hours, if not less. We will have our recap of the season via the stats game. Sam Klein comes and joins us on the DBR podcast once again to talk us through how we did predicting the season. I'll go ahead and tell you right away, we didn't do well. We never do well.
this will be the fun episode, ladies and gentlemen. If you have not experienced the stats game, you could go back. I think it's episode like 553 or something like that, give or take a number. Go back, listen to that. Listen to how confident we are that our predictions are right. And then you can listen to the recap and we can laugh at the fact at how wrong we were. Like that is the point of the stats game. It's all in good fun. There is a mythical trophy that we've never gotten that one of us gets to carry around, or at least just to pretend that they have in their house. But it's a fun thing. So check out the stats game prediction show if you haven't yet. Later this week, as Jason mentioned, you'll get the results and we'll see who won.
I love it. All right, for Donald, I'm Jason. This is the Duke Band to play us out and take us home.